Hello folks, as we promised, we are here with a global citizen. He's just 23 years old, but he sounds like a sage. When every other youngster is deprived of sleep, vitamins and minerals, and cannot think beyond six-pack abs, he talks about the ill effects of blue light and excess caffeine. He's a mover, a thinker, and a born philosopher who believes in the hard work, grind, and minimalism. So listeners, we are proudly presenting the mover whose words gonna shake you to the bones. Let's meet Octopus Avinash.
Hi Avinash.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on Road to Revamp. We are waiting to do this podcast for so long.
Yeah. Finally.
Yes, finally we are here. So here goes my first riddle. So you guys call it movement riddle. I'm just throwing some questions. So you call yourself a movement artist. You don't define yourself as a yogi or, you know, a gymnast or a parkour athlete. You sum up yourself as a movement artist.
Right.
So please define for our listeners, what is movement and what is being so artistic about it?
Okay, so there has been a long background, and yeah, it has been it did not happen one night thing.
Right.
It's something that eventually you end up being there. But I guess it was more of like, I was always attracted with the people who could do something that I could not do it. Mm-hmm. So I would say that I was someone who was never satisfied and always hungry.
Right.
And that brought me to the passion, like, okay, I want to do this. And then I get there and I found something else. Okay, mm-hmm. I want to do this. And that keeps me like, okay, I want to do everything.
Right.
And what should I call myself? When people ask, like, okay, you do everything, what do you call yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's something, if you say the word particularly movement, then everything fits into it. Because
right.
eventually you do anything, either it's any form of sports or you being an athlete, you're following any part of passions like artist, you're a dancer or a yogi or anyone.
Right.
What everyone is doing in common is some sort of movement. They're
right.
all moving in some ways in certain definite path.
Mm-hmm.
So I find all of those things are in common within
mm-hmm.
me. So I just like to call myself as a movement artist. Pretty simple and easy.
Yeah, but I mean, movement is everything.
Yep.
I mean, walking, you know, making a cup of tea.
Yep.
Taking a bath. Everything yep. is movement.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even you do all those things artistically?
Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah. So, it's something, you know, like, and then when you get specific into it, then
yeah.
how do you call this particular word movement?
Yes.
I think I like to call it more with the sense of consciousness, that anything that you do, you're aware of. You know what you're doing. You know where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not completely like a road with no destination. But
okay.
in a sense, like, you know what you're doing. You can feel it. You can sense it. And you know where you're going.
Right.
Whereas the same thing can be crossed by saying that eventually you want to improvise.
Right.
And you want to go anywhere and you want to have this feeling of, how should I say, just being at the present moment.
Okay.
Just being at the present moment. That's what I can say, like, yeah.
So anything which we do with consciousness, with a meditative mind,
yeah.
or like being a no mind, that is movement.
Yeah.
Even something, sitting in meditation.
Yeah, exactly. You know where your mind is going.
Yeah.
You can see it.
Okay. So, you started your movement practice with yoga. If I would say movement practice, I mean, I won't say it's a physical culture. So, you started with your with this yoga, and how it shaped you as a mover? Like, everybody starts from somewhere. Like, I started, if I should say, movement practice, as a CrossFitter, and now I am exploring it. So for you, it was yoga. So how it shaped you as a mover?
Yeah, That's what I always say, that being a kid, I was being chosen by the yoga because my body type, or that's what I got in my school. So it was not something that I choose it to be, but then I was good at it, and I was just chosen by the yoga,
what
by my teacher.
By
my teacher, like, okay, you're so good, you're flexible. My body type was something like that. And when I do anything, it just looks so graceful. So that's how I get into it. Because eventually everyone has some sort of door where they enter into this particular arena and they start to discover this whole world. So for me, that was yoga. That's where I got into it.
Mm-hmm.
And after a period of time, I start to meet new people here and there, and then I start to like all these things. And now it's everything. It's not that one thing.
So when did you realize, after practicing yoga for many years, when did you realize that, no, it's not enough? I have to, you know, cross the boundaries. I have to do something else.
Only when I encounter new situations. When I was in new situations, it's like, okay, I get into the field of running. My friends, okay, let's see who can sprint faster.
Yeah.
And I get there and I'm like, no, I lost it. I couldn't run that fast. And then a different situation, okay, let's just go and do some pull-ups. And I realized, like, oh, I don't have that pulling strength in me.
Mm-hmm.
And all those things, at first it started with a very competitive mindset, but then eventually it led me to something very holistic, where I don't feel like that I'm competing with anymore, but I feel like I'm just collaborating, I'm just learning, I'm just finding new point of growth, not weakness in the body, but I'm just finding there are many points of growth, there are many ways where I could just grow and improve myself. And that's what I'm in search for, just getting more complex by time.
Okay, so definitely as a system, yoga is a huge literature, great postures and asanas. So, still there was something missing.
You can see, like, yoga. In yoga, you don't really get to play with all these pulling strength unless you are doing some sort of Malkhamb or rope yoga.
Right.
But still, it's not that much there. There are tricks and things like where you can lock yourself and then do this and that. So, in certain aspects, like I always say, there is no one art that is complete.
Mm-hmm.
And that can make you whole as a human being, that you can go anywhere and be anywhere, and you can be just at an elite level, or
right,
you can match with everyone. There is no one sport that can be named like that.
Right.
You must stay open-minded, you know. You must be like a parachute,
right,
you know, which works only it's open.
Yeah.
So your mind has to be something like that.
Parachute.
Like a parachute. Keep it open so that it work well.
Right. There is a question. I got it from another podcast I was listening. So you used to have migraine attacks.
Right.
So how did you cure that?
I don't know why I used to have that, but it was always there ever since I was a young kid.
Mm-hmm.
In my early 9 or like when I was just 10 year old or something, and it pretty much lasts for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then only when I made the move to go to Vietnam, and that's where I start to play with the diet. Back then, since all my childhood I used to be a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
And once I get there, with the influence of Peter Bordal, I was into like trying new diet, something called a paleo diet. So I started to try non-veg foods and stuff like that. And after a period of month, I think like, okay, let's get a little serious into my practice and let's see what nutrition is. So I did this paleo diet and like very seriously for a month, could start to see in 3 weeks, I could start to see everything changing in myself. And after that, it never came back to me. Yeah, and
seriously?
I would say like it was nutrition that helped me. I won't say there was anything else.
Even you were
practicing yoga, like people
even
say.
Even I was practicing yoga. It was
people say doing pranayam and yogic postures can cure migraine.
Yeah.
But in your case, it was diet.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, having a little knowledge about nutrition or things like that, it can just alleviate. You know, you can be very strict. You can be like, okay, I'm a vegetarian. Okay, I just eat this. And you can just follow one thing and trust on it. Of course, you will get better because you're doing something which does help you. So
yes.
Migraine is something where the vessels that carry oxygen actually start to get narrower.
Okay.
So the oxygen supply to your brain is like less in amount. So when you start to do all these pranayama, it definitely helps you. But then once you have this understanding also a little bit about what is autoimmune syndrome and what is inflammation, you can actually tweak it and know what creates this inflammation in your body. And this will help you like anything, you know.
So it's like finding more ways to get over that situation.
Yeah.
Like pranayama is definitely helping you open those pathways.
Right.
But if you are able to restrict inflammation by eating right kind of foods, right kind of lifestyle, then definitely it will get better faster.
Yeah. Yeah, because this is one of the things that I would like to say to all your listeners.
Yeah.
Is, you know, is like study a little bit about nutrition.
Right.
Know what is right, know what is wrong. There is a big, like, there's a big population of people who don't know that what is the right diet for them, where they can feel the optimal state of mind and body, like really high and energetic,
right.
You know. I think it's something about experimenting, something about researching. You research with different diets for a period of time and see what is good.
Right.
Do not stick to one thing. Just try it out. See what goes good for you. Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, like in my family, they push, no, you have to be vegetarian or vegan because some religious belief or something. So human beings are above those boundaries or, you know,
I think,
labels.
I think because your parents never tried, how does it feel like to be a non-vegetarian?
You
know, that's one of the things. Even my parents, they never really tried this particular thing. And that's why...
Like, one thing comes up, because we're talking about diet, like, in my family, and I have seen with my relatives, there's so many people who are diabetic. So, they are diabetic, and still, they are not ready to alter their diets. They are not ready to migrate being a mild vegetarian, mild non-vegetarian from being a vegetarian. So they can actually stay alive. You know, their condition, they're injecting insulin and everything. Why do you think people go to the suffering, such kind of suffering, and why don't they just change it? If they know they can get over with this suffering.
It's the medical science. It's the medical science, it's the government, it's the doctors, it's those shitty doctors who are sitting in a clinic with just having this knowledge of conventional science, where their knowledge is not up to date. They are still reading the book that was printed out back in 1970 or things like that. And I think people need to educate on this particular part. I don't know seriously why people follow these doctors as their god, whereas they don't deserve to be a god. They don't deserve this respect of, you know, getting the ears or listeners like this. And people are somehow trapped with the mindset as well. It's like they are just not ready to take risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is so much of the things out there. It just takes a lot to step out of the things that you are doing already, to change your habit. You know, it takes a lot of awareness. It takes a lot of presence of the mind that, okay, I have to change. Okay, I'm going to follow a new discipline. It takes a lot. And I think people are just not ready for that. And yeah, this is it. It's the medical science. It's, educate yourself. That's what I will say.
I feel sometimes, you know, people get so addicted to their suffering that when you bring them into fresh air, they feel like they're being suffocated.
Yeah. So, exactly.
I feel like that sometimes. Like, if you ask someone to do this and you know that is scientifically proven and they'll get better, still they will resist.
Right.
Because they're so comfortable in their uncomfortable situations.
Yeah. I think, like, you know, we should just pick up the people and drop them into the situation and let them stay there.
Right.
And let the situation shapes them. People are so disconnected. They can't even feel it, you
right.
know. But they can feel it. I believe, you know, it takes a little while for
mm-hmm.
people to understand that this feels good.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually they will understand that what brings the happiness, you know, what brings the good feeling within them. They will understand it.
It takes time. So, let's come to movement again. So, what is so intriguing about movement culture? Like, you, there are so many paths which can lead you to movement, like climbing or dancing or martial art. But you've chosen a path of movement culture.
Right.
Okay, so why movement culture? Why not something else?
I just, you know, like, this is what I like to say always. So, me being very kind of childish or very hungry or unsatisfied with any one thing. And every time I like to jump into these extremes to try out this, to try out that. And every time I go to any particular extreme or any particular specialist who are just doing dance to learn dance from them. And there is one thing that always kind of struck to me,
right.
that these people, when I tell them that these are all the things that I do,
mm-hmm.
and they start to talk about that how their particular sort of movement is greater than the other.
Okay.
And this one thing is something that I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the question to them, to these particular specialists, is this, like, just tell me, can you or you cannot? That's it. There is no other question. It's not about, do not talk about the activity, do not talk about the task. Just
right.
show me whether you can do it or you cannot do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's one of the things. Like, every time I get into these people who are doing a lot of yoga, they are very specialist and things like that. Rather than appreciating and trying those new things, they start to talk about how yoga is greater than any other form of arts. Which is something that I don't like. If I go into any other culture, like if I enter to the CrossFit, and they will start to talk like how CrossFit is greater than any other
yes.
form of weightlifting, you know? So, which is in some sort of sense, but the question is, just tell me whether you can do it or you cannot. That's it. And that's one of the things that I don't see in the people who are in the movement culture. They're pretty open, they're pretty humble, they're ready to accept anything that comes to them.
Mm-hmm.
They're something like me, they're someone like me. And I just like that.
They're open to possibilities, they're open to ideas.
Exactly. And there's a lot of flow, there's a lot of exchange of ideas, shares of value, so you feel like it's balanced.
Yeah, I can see that, like, a person who's doing backflip, a person who's struggling to do a squat, a person who's just hanging, a person who's doing a muscle-up, all are there in movement culture.
Yeah.
And they're all appreciated.
Exactly.
Not like, you know, you're just doing squat, you are useless, and I'm doing muscle-up, it is a greater skill.
Yeah.
So both are considered as equal.
Yep.
And equally respected.
Yeah.
Hmm. Fascinating. So, let's come to Edo Porter,
yeah.
who actually, you know, started this whole revolution thing. So, how was your first encounter with Edo?
First encounter?
Yeah.
That eyesight.
Yeah.
Water-filled eyes. Yeah. Yeah, it was back in 2015. That's when I met him personally. 2014 when I met him personally in a movement camp. Yeah. I have no words.
Oh.
Everybody should have this experience. Not as a person, like just everything. It's just as a human being. He's not someone who is just a great mover, but he's also an amazing guy who understands what is a human connection and how we should communicate and, you know, anything and everything.
As I started talking about, you know, your eyes have changed.
Yeah. So much respect for him, man.
Yeah.
So much respect.
So I think he's like... a contagious virus. I mean, it's a very negative term, but he has those vibes which can, you know, change people.
Exactly. He's living the life. He's walking the walk, talking the talk. He's not someone who is just like, you know, preaching this and that. Just being around him, you can learn so many things. It's not like you have to speak it. Just watch him. Many things you can learn. Just watch his community, right. How we have like structured all everything around him. It's just amazing.
Yeah, like when I first time listened his podcast with conviction, because I was following him for like from 2013, but first time I listened to him properly in 2015 on London Real, and that podcast, like, it's too long, more than 2 hours, and I listened to it each and every bit. So I was trying to skip it, like, okay, I'll listen something here, something there. When he'll talk about handstand, I'll listen to it, grab some pieces, bits and pieces. But you know, I listened to the podcast fully 3 times in a day, and that was the day which changed my life forever. So I can easily understand if a podcast on YouTube can change so many things. The real presence and the real connection would be so much more.
Exactly. Like I said, it's not about handset. It's not about those acrobatics or movement. But it's more about, you know, human connection. You learn how to socialize. You learn how to communicate and things like that. It's all about.
So do you think a movement culture as a community, they're helping each other in moving well, growing well, and how are they doing it? Like, we can see some Facebook posts and all, but how how close these people are and how they're helping each other in getting better?
Like, so many ways. Yeah. You always receive support from them. In any ways, I have always received help from all these people. They are all my good friends. And I always ask suggestions for anything that I need, because all of these people are used to me, and they are still some kind of specialist into certain extremes, and now they are having this more sort of generalist. So let's suppose I have some of my close friends who are like a good coach of CrossFit, or they do a lot of Olympic lifting, and I come from a background of a yoga, so I go like, because I want to learn all those stuff, right? So I kind of ask them, okay, can you tell me like how to do this? And they help me. In a similar way, if they need to ask me certain things about locomotion or things like that, so I help them. So it goes like very, you know, we are helping each other. That's how it goes. We are good friends.
So how's your experience with CrossFitters? I find, you know, like I coach in a CrossFit box, but I don't want to call myself as a CrossFitter anymore.
Yeah.
There was a time I used to do 3 workouts a day. And now I hardly do 1 or 2 every week. But I find CrossFit makes me very open to ideas.
Yeah.
So what is your experience with CrossFitters, and how do they take movement culture and Edo?
I believe the same like you.
Yeah.
I believe the same. You can see, like, my workshop was more welcomed in your CrossFit box.
Yeah.
And I believe it's more welcome in any other CrossFit box as well. Whereas I don't think that it will be so much open in any dance studio or in a yoga studio or things like that, but it could be possibly. But you can see, like, CrossFits are more open to ideas, and they're more welcoming in all sense of all these kind of movements. And I can see there will be a lot of growth in this particular CrossFit company
community.
Yeah, community.
Let's talk about locomotion. Like, you seem, you know, to talk more about that.
Yep.
Why locomotion is so important? I mean, as a human being, we know how to walk. Yep. Then what is the point coming on all four and either doing baby crawl or doing a lizard crawl, which is very exotic move to see. But what is the point doing these crawls and animal patterns?
Basically, I think, like, from my point of view, so basically locomotion is just simply traveling from one space to another, traveling from one place to another. Whereas at this point of life, all these people from any generation, they're just walking. Just simply, if they have to travel from one place to another, like any certain amount of distance, they're just simply walking. And I believe that they don't even know how to walk. They're always falling every steps. That's how I see. But in the other ways, we are losing this touch with the floor. Yeah. We think like, you know, when we are on all our fours, it's a disrespect. You know, imagine how a president is not allowed to bow anywhere.
Yeah.
So why do you have to stay so upright? What is that feeling? You know, come on, let's roll. Let's go on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something, you know, it has become a pride feeling where even if you do something like this, you are being looked down upon by the other people
yes.
when you do this. And I think you're missing so much if you're doing so, you know, like the other population. We are meant to be like this. How did you grow up as a child, as a baby? You are quadrupedaling, you know, and by time we are meant to increase the complexity in our movement, where I believe we became even more simple. We started learning how to walk, and from four legs, four limbs, we start to be on our two limbs, and we never touch the other two ever.
Right.
So what you're just losing, you're becoming even more simplistic. You're not even like, you know, from the movement perspective, you should be becoming more complex. You should learn what are the new patterns of movement. You know, how can you do this? How can you do that? How can you solve the riddles?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can you roll? How can you walk? How can you do some cross counter walks, some epsilateral walk, and things like that? But we are losing it. In the last few days, 2 days of workshop, you saw how complex we can get in our movement
by just placing your hands in different positions and entangled in your own body.
Exactly. Choke
ways.
Yourself.
Yes.
Choke yourself, man. You alone is enough with your four limbs.
Yeah. So is there any developmental benefit when you do crawling? Like I've seen that some papers, research papers, when they say like crawling, if a kid is not crawling enough, and he started walking very early in his early age, then they don't develop that kind of strength in their limbs, and they don't develop that kind of neural pathways in their brain. So is it correct?
Yeah, I believe the same, exactly. Like, I've been doing this for the last 5 years as my sorts of practice every now and then. And I think it's really important to develop those complexity in the movement, not just for with the body, but you can see how even our brain work, you know, and it's not easy as well.
Right.
It's a lot of strength movement. Try crawling for an hour and try walking for an hour. Which one feels harder?
Yes.
You know, in practical life, it's impossible that, of course, you're not going to crawl for like kilometers, but then you can imagine like which one is going to be harder.
Yes.
So, of course, the strength development and with the complexity, because now you're using not just two limbs, so there are four limbs, which provides you more combinations of movement, and then you can play more. Imagine you standing on two legs and you're doing all those Michael Jackson dance steps.
Right.
Imagine Michael Jackson having this four legs and doing the dance steps. There could be so many combinations of movement, right? So similar things, you can have it on the ground and you can explore more and do more. But I think we are not finding that.
Right.
We should search for it. We should do more research on it. And it's
possible. We're becoming too intellectual that we have forgotten that this body has some purpose. We are only, you know, considering this upper half.
Yeah.
Is that this is important, and below this upper layer, everything is useless.
Yeah, exactly. We are just too much in our head.
Yeah.
You know, we're just too much in our head. That's one of the things you will see, you know, like many of the time you see people come to your CrossFit box, they pay the membership. They go like, okay, I pay the membership here. They think like they are paying the membership for this particular body.
Right.
You know? And then when you start to teach, they go like, I just came here to sweat. You know? But you go like, nah, you pay the money for me to put the head over your body.
Right.
So that you can move together. It's not just the body that you came here for.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you some of the knowledge. You came here for education. And I believe this education is missing. And yes. we need more understanding. We just no need to read books and talk about it. We need more body language. We need more movement. You know, like this is one of the things that I see. Like people are so good in talking. They can talk for hours, this and that, and they can also start to have an assumption that maybe I can do this. Oh yeah, I can do that. But let's visit the place.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it and see whether we can or cannot.
Right. And when we're talking about locomotion, these days people make everything a workout. So, like, locomotion is being considered as a workout these days in gym. I see, like, 5 minutes bear crawl, 5 minutes lizard crawl, 5 minutes this crawl. Do you think this is the right way to approach it?
Well, somehow it's helping, you know.
Yeah, it's helping.
But then the way it's being marketed, again, like, you can see they need something to market. And I don't know what catches the fire always these things that is very linear and very simple. And they always start to catch the market. Like, you can see anything. Fitness and the guy with the big muscles and the guy doing just the basic crawling with nothing very complex. They are all getting the fire. But I think we can do more than that. We can do way more than basic crawling, basic quarter pedaling.
Like you bring three different locomotion pattern, and they look pretty easy while we were doing them, you know, individually. But as soon as you integrated those things, like 1 2 3 3 2 1, and using the mathematics with the movement, it just changed the game.
Exactly.
And more than tiring the physical body, it was tiring the brain. Like,
yeah.
Okay, now I have to. From 3 to I have to go to 2. So I think approaching locomotion in place of, you know, a single workout, we should try to integrate this.
Yep. Yeah, because it's more about movement complexity.
Right.
That's what we are doing here. That's what we are talking about. How can you go with the sequence of movement?
Okay, so once, 2-3 years back, Iro started this squat, 30-minute squat and 7-minute hang challenge. I did that, and so many people followed this thing worldwide. I want to understand from you how important it is to do like 30-minute squat every day and or hang every day, and why it is so important.
Yeah, the purpose of this was to basically target the general population around the world. Like, you can see how this general population, they don't go any below than the knee height when they sit down. They're always having this habit of sitting down in a couch, in a bed, in a sofa, in a chair, which is always high above. You don't really need to kneel down or get any lower than the knee height, right? And because of that particular purpose, we were losing this particular range of motions in your ankles, knees, and hips, and even the stretch in the lower back.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can see when you do this particular thing as a squat, when you go below there, you can see that you start to get all these health benefit, not just from the outside, but even in your digestion, in your digestive systems, all these things start to benefit from just this one posture. And of course, this is how we were meant. This is how we were
But people are doing squats as an exercise. They're doing thousands of reps.
Yeah,
so what is the difference? Like, they are doing a lot of reps, and you are asking, or it was asking to just sit for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So what is the basic difference between doing squat and as an exercise, just as a resting posture?
So in general, you can see like how it has been marketed at first, that squat is something that help you to build big butts and leg.
Yes.
And that's what these people are aiming for. But they are not realizing that this particular thing can also be used as a rest.
Mm-hmm.
So many of my students or my people, when they ask me like, how can I get to that deep range of motion in squat? I tell them, don't consider this as an exercise. Consider this as a posture where you can sit down and rest. Sit down and do any particular task, and this particular squat, as to grass squat, will become easy for you. Mm-hmm. So it's more about the mindset, how you look at it. You know, so when I say, or Ido says, like squat, we are not aiming to build those big butts or thighs. We are aiming it like, can you just sit down? It's a comfortable position to just sit down and rest in that particular bottom position. And when it comes to hanging, then something, it's like, you know, nowadays people are just losing this overhead range of motion because we never have to use this. We don't use it at all. We don't have to do anything. It's always in front of our eyes. We can just grab it.
Right.
You know, we don't have to reach up for that mango in a tree, you know, or apple or things like that. So
something
we are,
over there.
Yeah. We don't have to. And that's another thing that we are losing it. So mm-hmm. while doing this hanging, you start to build this range of motion in your shoulders. And also when you suspend yourself, because now we are not even hanging down from a tree or anything, you know. So when you start to hang and you suspend yourself and let the gravity do the work, you start to get this decompression
right.
in your spine, and which is just so good. Do it, feel it, you will love it.
Yeah, I had a grade 2 rotator cuff tear in my right shoulder,
yeah.
and surgery was the last resort. And then this hanging challenge came. And I started doing that. In 1 month, everything changed.
Yep.
After that, I was able to do kettlebell snatches with 24 kg.
Awesome.
And I was unable to press like 12 kg in the starting of that month. So it changed a lot of things. But people do pull-ups. Like I was saying about squats, people do pull-ups. So pull-ups and hanging, they're two different things.
Yeah, like I said, you know, like, so when this particular thing has been taught in the conventional fitness world, they aim for building big muscles in your arms, bicep, lats, or things like that.
But strength
but then,
too.
Yeah, strength. But then when I say this, my idea is not that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the range of motion, the motion that we are losing over time.
Right.
So that's why even when it comes to squat, even when it comes to this, I'm talking about the general population, that how can they benefit from this, just a simple sort of relaxation exercise.
Okay.
It's not even something I will say is an exercise. It's just something that is relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. So like it is for everyone. Try
mm-hmm.
it. You will just see like how good it feels. You know, we know how good it feels.
Yes, it is.
It's amazing.
In during workshop, like we were talking about walking, like people don't know how to walk properly. During workshop, you touched one aspect of this, like hesitation walk. Can you just elaborate it for our listeners so they can start at least learning how to walk properly?
Yeah, this
I know it's hard to explain in the words,
I understand this, but particular thing is like, you know, at this point, you can see like how many people they walk and they just don't know like how to apply the brake. You have a car,
mm-hmm.
you just know how to accelerate, and then you don't know how does disc brake work. You know, how to stop abruptly. You know, and how to just move properly in that particular situation. So that's one of the things that I wanted to bring in this workshop, is like to teach the general population that how can you roll from heel to toe, how can you apply the brake right away and hold yourself or push yourself back out of the situation or move right away quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things, even the simple martial walk and then hesitation steps, the purpose was to just teach people how to walk, how to stop,
okay.
and how to walk hesitantly.
Okay.
You know, how to have this feeling that you don't step over someone or something. Know it before it happens.
Mm-hmm.
The basic idea was that. Know it before it happens to you. Sense it before you shift the weight to your leg.
Okay. Let's come to handstands.
Yep.
Yeah, it's always, you know, fascinating me. And I'm struggling to have it for so long. And everybody wants to have handstand, no matter they are you know, dedicating themselves or not. So what is the basic step to learn handstands or any kind of inversion on their hands?
Yeah, handstand, it's so in my general way, it's like the way I teach or the way I help people to, you know, at first from their mind, like how can you ease your mind to look at the handset and see it as an easy task or something that you are meant to do, you know. Mm-hmm. It's something like I always tell to the people, you know, like walking. You learn walking by falling, you know. Right. In a similar way, you look at the handstand. In a similar way, you just kick up. You get this feeling of upside down, which is so important, you know.
Right.
The feeling of getting upside down, it just feels so good, you know, when you come back from it.
Yeah.
So, it just try, in a way, like I always like to say, you know, try like a child. You know, try like a child who is learning how to walk, who kick up, who fall, you know, just similar like that, you know. It just feels so good to roll down, to go inverse, to go into inversions, and then fall and roll. Do it in a bed, do it against the wall, start from somewhere. And then, okay, static handstand is what everyone is looking for, because
yes,
it just looks so sexy,
right,
you know, that you can stay upside down on your two arms.
Mm.
There are many other drills to get there. Stiffen up, learn how to do hollow body line.
Can you name some drills so our listeners can, you know?
Something like back body line drill, front body line drill is basic to understand. Then you learn how to kick up starting from the squat positions, gliding onto one side and then kicking up and holding into a split stance.
Okay.
And then lowering down with control, things like that. You start, you try. Yeah, and when you have to, yeah, at first it's more about stiff enough.
Okay.
Stiffen up when you're upside down to find the balance. Use your fingers to counterbalance.
Okay. Like we do while we walk, when we are falling forward, we use our toes to prevent the
exactly,
fall.
Exactly, exactly.
Right. And in handstands or in any kind of locomotion, especially when you're doing it on your hands, it stresses a wrist a lot. So do you think a better wrist preparation is important before doing all those things?
Exactly. Wrist preparation, it's just not the wrist, you know.
Or just because get up and start crawling?
No, just like, you know, you are doing any sorts of movement, you understand. So, okay, there are mobility and there are many routines that you can do for the ankles, you can do for the wrist, elbow, all these joints. And these things, they are meant to be prepared. You
right.
have to work it out. You have to understand that what are the ranges of motion. How can you stretch the ligaments? How can you load the ligaments and understand what is your ability
right.
and how much you can load on it? It's something that we should do with each joints, depending on their task, to understand like what how much you can load on it. What's your mobility? What's your flexibility? So there are many wrist routines that you can do
right.
for your wrist, and it will definitely help you to get there into handstand.
Wow. You'll try to implement everything.
Everything.
Yeah. Okay. Now we have skipped your introduction.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Let's talk about your upbringing, from where you belong. How did you, you know, how did your parents shape you into what you are right now? Something.
Situation, man. Situation.
Yeah, I know situation, but definitely, you know,
your
upbringing always helps
right.
you who you
exactly.
are.
Exactly. It's just the reason why I call it situation is because everything comes under it, you know.
Right.
Even my parents were helping me to create a situation. Yeah, whether it was good or bad, but it was some sort of. Well, I'm from a small city, from a hill station of east of India, Ranchi. And yeah, I started yoga when I was pretty young, at the age of 7. I went on the journey full on. I was also a competitive yoga player till the age of 16. And after that, I tried gymnastics for 6-7 months. Doing pretty intense for 7 to 8 hours each day, and after that I moved to Vietnam pretty like when I after just I finished high school, and I got a job opportunity to work there, and I took the chance, which I believe was amazing. I took the chance. I did it very secretly, like not letting my parents know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But eventually I told them. And that's where everything crazy happened in my life. That's where all the changes. That's where I think I start to count my age. That, okay, now this is where I'm living the life. This is where I'm doing the things that I want to do. And I started to try everything. I started to do everything. It was everywhere. That, you know how I tell you, like, it's the people who try everything,
right,
who are everywhere, are eventually able to get a hold on something at some point of life. You know, so I was that kind of person who was just hungry for everything.
Yeah, you got it too early though.
Yeah, I got it too early. Yeah, exactly. So that's where I get into a lot of fitness stuff and then slowly transitioning towards movement, falling in love with everything. Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, not one person. Everything. Yeah.
Okay, now this is a very important question, more than handstand.
Okay.
You seem to be fond of eating delicious foods. And what do you like the most and what do you hate the most when it comes to food?
Very interesting. Yeah, I love eating. People who know me, they know what I mean by this.
Yeah, you even love cooking.
Exactly, yeah. I'm all around the fire.
Yeah.
So for me, the one of the most important thing that I can target or tell your listeners is know about the oil that they are using. It's something that I think it's very important to know that which oil you're using. I'm super aware and I'm super sensitive to tell, like, on this particular topic, that should not be using soya oil or canola or palm or sunflower oil or shitty things like that, vegetable oil, eventually, you know, like how these things are very hydrogenated and they're just not healthy for you. So I'm very much into using right kind of oil, and that's what I suggest. So as you know me already, we cooked many times.
Yeah.
I'm always around butter, coconut oil, animal fat, and things like that. So this oil is something that is very important, which people should know, which I am always aware about when I eat outside or anywhere. The other thing is, I just love eating non-veg. Yes. I'm a lot more into organ meat and stuff,
right?
Because I just feel it's a lot more nutrient dense to me. Okay, I'm talking from a point of view. I'm talking from a point of experience. It's not something that I have just tried and things like that. I used to be a vegetarian all my life since my childhood. It's something that I've changed, and I've always experimented and researched with this for like a month, this and that. And I find myself to be very right when I'm eating a bit of, you know, non-veg. Not a bit of, a lot of, maybe.
Like, I've seen you don't count calories. And you eat like huge, humongous amount of food.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of fat in that.
Yep.
So, but people hate fat. Everything is fat free. How do you, you know, summarize this thing? Like, it's quite contrary to the normal belief.
Yeah.
So, can you elaborate it a bit? Why do you eat so much fat?
Fats? You know, fats are like...
And is it really important?
It is super important. You know, fat doesn't make you fat. Let me make it clear, okay? Don't say that. Fats as macronutrients should be necessary in our daily diet. Without fats in our diet, we should never be able to achieve proper hormonal signaling in our body. Your 66% of the brain is mostly made of the fats. So eat more ghee, butter, or animal fat, or fatty fish. And being fat is not a bad thing, most probably, as long as you're eating healthy protein and carbohydrates or fats in your diet. But being fat while eating junk food is something very hazardous. Mm-hmm. It's a disaster to yourself. Yeah. So, and all of these things, like I said, know your oil, know all these basic things. Fat doesn't make you fat. They are perfect.
Like, you know, one of my Tai Chi teachers, and even in one of his interviews, he said, it's nice to have
small beer belly.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I say. Being fat is not a bad thing, as long as you know like what you are made of. You know, what is stuffed in your potato.
Yeah. Typical Edo style. And you focus a lot on, you know, this blue light thing. You focus a lot. I mean, everybody says that we should sleep tight. You should sleep well. But nobody actually, you know, give those steps. So can you help us sleep better?
Yeah, like
get
I told
the perfect you. Circadian rhythm.
Yeah, we had this conversation a day ago, right? I told you, like, this is light, like, this is something that I tell always, you know, that people are having this issue about sleep, not being able to sleep, and like many other diseases, they don't understand that we need a light guru who can tell us that the light is important, like what kind of light. We should understand that all these modern lights, artificial lights, they have certain pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
And if you understand this, then you can really tweak. Like I said, I don't go to sleep. I fall asleep when time hits 9 or 10, you know. So how do I do that? I stay in an environment. I make a situation like that, that when sun sets, I stay in a very amber light in my home. It's a Himalayan salt lamp or just a Yugil black light I just have, you know, in my home. And it's just so romantic. And you will fall asleep like a baby. With this, I mean that people should know that, you see, melatonin is a hormone that your pineal gland secretes when it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
And all the growth and repairs of the cells take place at night when you sleep. So sleep is extremely vital. Last but not least, you must always sleep in a cool and pitch black room, completely dark, where you can't even see your hands when you open your eyes. So, you know, sometimes I fall asleep with my eyes open. How does that sound to you? Just kidding. Like, with my eyes open because I cannot see, so I know it's dark and I fall asleep easy. And morning sunlight is necessary for various reasons. A proper full spectrum sunlight is what that runs, resets the whole biological clock in our body. Mm-hmm. Also, the ultraviolet light in the sun that everybody is talking about
right now,
that, you know, that UV sunlight is very, very necessary for our eyes and skin to initiate vitamins making process in our body, you know. Like, UV light is good for you, okay?
Yeah.
Let me clear it. That's it.
UV light is trying to, you know, protect their skin. Sunblock cream and all.
Please ditch your sunglasses, ditch your sunscreen, and go out there naked in the sunlight. As much as possible.
Yes.
What exists
Expose
in nature,
yourself to the
yeah,
sun.
What exists in nature is in the balance. Okay, that's it.
Can you suggest some reads so people can, you know, or some people can follow to understand this, you know, gazing in sun or staying in sun feels a bit better.
Yeah, for me, biohack guru is Dr. Jack Cruz. You can find him. He's pretty famous. He's just upcoming. He's an amazing guy. He talks about light, water, magnetism, and you will get to know a lot of things from there.
Okay, so Jack Cruz,
Dr. Jack Cruz, that's my guy.
So you were using some special glasses to block that blue light.
Yep.
What is that? Or what are these things which we can actually use to prevent?
It's called biohack.
Yeah.
It's actually when you know, when you stay in this modern life,
uh-huh,
and you know you can't escape the city because everything is in the city. So you should know, like, okay, what are the pros and cons of living in a city? So you know that it's morning sun out in the city all night. So you see all this artificial blue light which is out there. And particularly the blue light spectrum gives you the signal in your brain that it's morning, which you don't want to have when you're going to bed in the night. And that's why I always like to cover my skin when, you know, when I'm out in the evening, late evening or in the night, and I use this blue blockers, because most of the things that you receive or your recipients are from the eyes. You signal it, you signal the light and spectrum of light. So having this blue blocker that I use oftentimes, it blocks the blue wavelength of the light, and then...
So you're saying even your skin absorbed that blue light.
Exactly. Okay. Your skin, you hide it better.
Yeah. Hmm. We just finished a two-day weekend workshop with you. And you talk a lot about different movement and all. You experimented with us. And, you know, can you, I mean, how did you feel after taking that workshop? How was your experience with your countrymen and with your fellow movers? Can you describe it slightly more?
Eventually, like, I have to come back to India. It's my home. It's my land.
Uh-huh.
And I definitely wanted to share this with my people. And, you know, like, of course, having this Hindi conversation with
yes.
the people, it kind of bridges that gap. There is no more communication gap. Like, if you cannot understand English, I can speak to you in Hindi,
yes.
you know. So, this particular having this, you know, benefit and having to speak in your own country, it's the good point. Well, I believe, like, there is a lot of movement aspects or sorts of practice is missing in my country, in India itself, which I think we should bring it on in a bigger way.
Mm-hmm.
We need it way more. I see, like, it's not out there. People, not just the practice, but I believe the people are missing the perspective or philosophy behind what is movement and how do we look at it. And I think people can benefit from it a lot in my country. Well, it's a big population. It
yes.
fills the 1/7 of population of whole world.
Yes.
We can do a lot more. And if we can make this place a better world, then imagine how much we are, you know, where we are. Yeah. I think we need it. And people are good.
Definitely people are good, but they have no idea.
They have no idea. I think just because they haven't met someone like that, they haven't been exposed to knowledge like this,
yes.
which they needed. And whoever came in the workshop, you can see, like, eventually they end up turning and changing their philosophy, their mindset. Okay, sir, I got it. Now I have to
yes.
bring more movement into my practice, more locomotion, more coordination practice
right.
in my... So I can see that. I can sense that something good is going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are
Do you think
there.
This we can bridge the gap between... you know, so-called fitness industry, because they are also, you know, in a way promoting movement and movement culture. So I think if there is some bridge between these two extremes, I mean, movement culture is not extreme though, but still fitness community consider it as an extreme because people are doing crazy stuff. So how to bridge this gap and how to bring those people close to the movement?
You can see, like I said, like it's something, you know, like we are just dividing into different branches, but we come from a same tree,
right.
and everybody have the purpose is to fruit out a better lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
you know. So in different aspects, in different ways, even this community of fitness, they are all trying to bring a better lifestyle to the people. They all want. It's the knowledge that we are missing. And once we talk to them, you know, once people are open to receive the ideas, to understand and experiment with things, they will see, they will feel it, that
right.
it helped them. It helped you out to have a better lifestyle. It helped you out to get better in movement. It does.
So what exactly they are missing?
They're
also investing a lot of time, like 2-3 hours in gym, some serious folks. At least 1 hour, 2 hour, everybody is trying to invest, they're trying to have a good body. But what they are missing exactly?
I think education. Education is what is missing. They are missing education. They are missing the purpose, that why they are doing. I think they are not missing the purpose, but they are just not having the right purpose, that why they are doing what they are doing. You know, like how bullshit it is. You got the lower back pain and then rather than doing something about it, you are just being told to rest.
Right.
It doesn't help you, you know. Moving helps, unless it's like broken or it's something serious. But, you know, this is how we should be learning. Like, you are going to gym, rather than helping your back to build up, you apply a belt, you take a belt on, and then you go for deadlift. Why do we need it, you know?
Exactly. Using a belt has totally different purpose than just protecting your back.
Yeah.
Yeah. People don't, I am teaching in this industry for so long, and when I teach them that, no, it is to correct your breathing while you are lifting.
Right.
Not to, you know, exactly protect it. You are tightening everything, so you are not able to breathe, and you are exposing your back for injury.
Yeah.
So, you this is a kind of proprioceptive, you know, awareness. It is developing something, so you can breathe properly and protect your spine.
Yeah. So you can see like how most of the fitness model, they are completely in the braces, wearing nice shoes to brace their feet, wearing nice gloves to really, you know, get a better grip, wearing a belt around the waist so that they can do. So they're just trying to brace themselves. They're not getting that flow of movement, the sense they are, you know, isolating themselves.
Right.
We can do way more better. Their purpose of aesthetics is not going to fill up the purpose of movement, you know. So we need this change and a shift in the mindset that why are you doing what you're doing, you know. How long you want to be like this, you know. Why do you do this? Can we do this? Can we try this? Let's see how it goes. Let's see how it feels.
So the kind of time they are investing, it can be used in a very purposeful way.
Yeah. Education. Educate yourself. Educate. Know, you know, try new things and see. Be more with the feeling. See, you can understand. I don't believe that people are really sugar-coated. You know, they can feel it.
They're doing such a hard work. I see, like, spending 2 hours in a gym is a huge time. And if it can be used, you know, holistically, they're doing, like, telling us, like, for lower body, you use squats.
Yep.
You do deadlifts.
Exactly.
So, exactly, you're not saying that, no, leave the gym and do only crawling. You're saying, like, make it more holistic.
Yeah. Reach out for new things.
Okay. Now let's come to something which you were discussing 2-3 days back. You find, like, you're pretty young, just 23, 24 years old. And at that day, you were talking about, like, you find today's Indian youth is pretty depressed. They have no purpose. They are, you know, finding fault in each and everything. And, like, the world is the worst place to live. Everyone is against them.
Yeah.
So how to bring them into harmony? And how to bring them into harmony? By doing movement practice.
What I can give out here to my
you Indian don't seem angry. You don't seem, you know, dejected.
Yeah, I'm like, what I can add in here more is like, it's not first the movement part, but it's also something like what I have seen with my friends around and the people around is like, they're missing this part of taking risk in their life.
Mm-hmm.
They are missing this part of knowing their season, knowing their age, like what you should be doing at this age. And I don't think that it's particularly the fault of the youth or the younger generation, but it's also a little bit, a big part of the fault come from the parenting. Like, they were not guided that way. So what I can suggest here to my youth generation is that learn how to take risk. Learn how to take a calculated risk.
Right.
Be very specific when you're asking for advice from anyone. And the people whom you're asking for advice, it doesn't have to be your parent all the time. Ask from the one who have done it already, who have traveled in that path already, who can speak it from the sense of experience. Not just because they are elder, they will give you a right decision or a right, you know, right advice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once you consider someone, okay, he is my God, and I will ask every advice from him or her, you know, and then you take that advice and then you fall into a shitty trap, and then you're kind of dejected here and there, and then you lose hope for life. That's what I see, you know. That's what is happening. Your father told you, your parents told you, like, okay, you should go for engineering. You went full on, and then after like period of time, you start to realize, like, this is not what you should be doing. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not what you're here for. This doesn't bring that drive. This doesn't feels like it's your passion, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and then what? It's too late. You're already more than 25, and then you come to realize this, and you start to feel like you're good for nowhere. Right. So I believe, like, try out something that is other than your conventional education of school, of your college. You should always have a passion, an art, something towards, you know, painting, dancing, movement, or anything. Just go for it, you know.
Or just the 9-to-5 thing.
Yeah, just fall in love with it. Try whatever that is. Know what is your passion and just go for it. Having this in your backpack, as even as a side pocket, you know, will help you. Maybe it can come handy to you later because you have done something and you have not only done your science or mathematics, you know, something that for many of us doesn't bring the drive. You know, we feel more alive when we do something. You know, something other than our studies. We feel more alive when we see ourselves a little different than the general population. You know, yes. We feel like, I'm valid. You know, we feel like, I'm doing something that they can't do it.
So, but this validity things is going wild. I mean, everybody wants, these days, everybody wants to do everything. And
it's the society, man. It's the society that is killing my friends. You know, I consider all of these as my friends. You know, I feel really bad. Here and there, I always get to listen to all these young people who want to do something. They drop out from the high school and their parents are running after them that, what are you doing? Why? And this and that. So I think, go for it, man. Try it. Risk it out. See. It's not that bad.
I find, you know, not just this, I mean, parents are definitely, I mean, in some cases, they're pushing their kids. But kids are also not ready to, you know, challenge themselves. They want everything with comfort. They want to do something crazy, but yes, I should have comfort. So how is it possible? You know, you have to go out, sweat it out, blood, sweat, and hard work, and then only it will come. So, but everybody wants, you know, instant gratification, because we see here when we teach people, like, they see some crazy CrossFit videos, they come and they try to imitate that, and then we say, no, there is a process. They feel dejected, they feel, oh my God, this is too hard. And sometimes they find ourselves harsh on them. So, and not with youngsters, like with anybody, everybody has this kind of mindset. So I think, not just, you know, they're not being just pushed, they don't want to get them, I mean, want anyone to push them, but at the same time they want everything, you know, so easily, like in a platter.
I believe, like, just one word, they're missing the self-discipline. Our younger generation, so much, they're just missing the self-discipline, not the discipline, you know, not something like their parents or with their sticks, or their teacher with their stick, that you have to do it, you know. It's just like a dog who just start to learn how to act nicely when stick is in the hand of the owner, you know. Not that, but a self-discipline that from the within yourself, you know what you want to do, where you want to go. You're not doing it because somebody is asking for it, but you are doing it because that's how you feel it, that's how your instinct feels it, you know. And you will stay with it, you will stick to it no matter what happens, you know. We are missing that particular self-discipline towards anything. That's what I see, you know.
Exercise, or whether it is studies, everything.
Yeah, it's the self-discipline that we needed, nothing else.
Don't you think the environment is so distracting? I mean, 20 years back, there was no Facebook.
Yeah.
But now, it's really, really hard because you're, you know, having a smartphone in your hand, and
walking everywhere. Even I see people doing Olympic lifting. See how complex this move is, and you know, phone in their pockets, and their phone is over here, and they're doing Olympic lifting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think this distraction is everywhere, and in such distraction, being self-disciplined, you know.
I can understand. Nobody would have realized this back then, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But now when anybody buy phone, they don't even think that what it can bring it to them.
Yeah.
And now you can see like even young kids of 11, 12 age, they're having a smartphone with them. And they don't really know what is the pros and cons. Nobody tell them. They just see that it's so common. Everybody is doing it, you know. So they find themselves to be very relevant, and they find it's general.
Yeah, information is at their fingertips.
Yeah.
And they don't even have to go to a library to find a book or find several books to get some idea.
Exactly.
Everything is there in one video or in one article.
And then you're losing the application. There are so many videos that you just keep on scrolling. You find it so fascinating that you keep on watching, and then you don't do anything. And that's why I say, read one book several times, watch one video several times, go and try it, do it. Whatever that it is there, go and apply it. Don't be the someone who, you know, with a big head, with so much knowledge, which doesn't work at all.
So, Avinash, you live your life like you're talking about in a side pocket of the backpack.
Yeah.
You are living your life for last some months with two backpacks. They're like, they're your companions in your journey. How do you manage being a, you know, consistent traveler? And I mean, what is the inspiration behind this?
Well, this is what I chose to be like. This is what I chose because I find so much of richness. I find so much of encounter of new challenge when I'm doing all these solo traveling for the last couple of months. I love meeting new peoples. I love making new friends. And the information or the knowledge that you get to share, the story that you get to share and make a new connection with someone, you know, it just feels so good. So this is what I chose to be like. And I don't know when it is going to be over, but for now it just feels so fascinating. And like one of my friends, she told me, like, just be open for good and bad. Both of them are coming. So it's not so much fun. It's not so bad as well, but anything can happen to you.
But you have very limited resources all the time.
Yeah.
Very few clothes, very few, you know, things to use in any way, but it's hard to manage.
Yeah, nothing really special in my backpack. Nothing very wealthy possessions that I carry in my backpack. And I don't rely on that. That's what I tell. You know, own a healthy body and a healthy mind. If you don't have it, build one for yourself. And just do it. You know, it's something that you can use it anywhere at any time of the day. You know, if you have a healthy body and mind, that's it. You are done. You know, you don't need anything else. You can build everything, rest on it. If you don't have one, build one. Go for it. It's very important. So I don't really rely on all those things.
Is there any plan to turn two backpacks into one? Reducing the stuff more?
Definitely. Someday I will do that. Someday.
So you want movement complexity, but life and bags should be as simple as they can.
You know, this is something that I say, you know, you have a big book of shelf in your home, you know, but you don't carry your book with you every time, right? You put it in your brain and then you walk freely. In a similar way, you know, your teacher gave you a cup of a tea, you know, you don't hold that cup of a tea in your hand and walk around. Just drink it, sip it all and throw the cup and embrace it. No? So you are given this life, don't be so much like, oh, what is the purpose of this life, you know, how, you know, handling this, handling that, balancing that. Just embrace it. This is how it is. Go put yourself in different situation and let the situation shape your life. So this is what I'm doing every day, sleeping in different places, you know, meeting new people and things, and these particular situations, they are shaping me in the way they want, you know. So just embrace the wild youth within you and just go for it full on.
What's the plan where you're taking your workshops in India, and where will they reach you on online platforms? So you're really online, but yes, still they want to reach you and want to learn more about Moment. So is there more workshops planned in coming weeks or months?
Recently I just decided that I want to give a little more time to my country for my people, so I will definitely do some more workshops around the other metropolitan cities of India, like Bombay, Bangalore, Calcutta, and places like that. And I want to have this connection because this is the place where eventually I want to serve, you know, more of my population. I want to grow it bigger. And also, people can reach me on Facebook, Instagram, like other kids. You can find me with my name, Avinash Kumar. Also, have been doing online coaching. I have now 10 students who I can coach online. So if there's any participants or any practitioners who are serious into this movement or to get into it, I can help them online if they're interested.
They can reach you through Facebook.
They can reach me through Facebook. They can give me an email on avinashk996@gmail.com. Pretty much this is it. And yeah, I'm looking for something big. I'm looking for something big in India. I want to do something big.
Something.
Like something big, something for my
like
population.
A studio.
Yeah. Something big for my population. I want to bring this revelation.
So Avinash, thank you very much for your time. It was seriously energetic conversation, stellar conversation, and you know, it's hard to find someone who's so young and so inspiring. And I'm more than 10 years younger, or older than you, but still, like, I whenever I meet you, I think, like, you know, those teacher-student relationship, I have a lot to suck from you. Thanks a lot for your time.
Yeah, it was my pleasure having to come over in your place, and thank you so much for having this conversation in an open CrossFit box rather than having it in a studio. I feel more open and aware now.
Yeah.